want it to be a modern day movie, and I want our stud muffin that we're casting as Rochester. He's literally gonna like do full drag. That's how he's gonna do it. It's gonna be the insane makeup, the 3 mile high hair, the fake breasts, like everything.
God. I can see this as like a drag show that she goes to.
Yes.
And she doesn't know he's a drag queen and doesn't recognize him.
Yes.
Because his drag is that good.
Amazing.
And then she's doing like audience participation. Patient?
Yes.
And that's how she tricks him.
It's like stand-up comedy, and he's like roasting the audience and he's roasting Jane, and then later he'll like drop his voice and be like, Jane, it's me, your lover. Like, what the hell? Lillian, we're back.
Piper, we are.
Hello. And hi, audience. We're also back with another rewatch.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What did we watch this week?
We rewatched the 2006 BBC because we love ourselves and wanted to watch something good.
Yay. It's always good to go back to something that just does it right.
I was watching it and there was like parts of it where I was like, I built this up too much in my head. It's not as good as I thought it was. And then I got to episode 3 and I was like, just kidding. This is the best.
It's definitely confirmed for me that this is easily my favorite portrayal of Jane herself. Okay. Ruth Wilson takes the prize, in my opinion.
She is so great. And I was going to watch like a bunch of actor interviews, but it's been a weird week. So I only watched like part of one. And they referred to her as newcomer, Ruth Wilson. And I was like, oh, yay.
Very nice. I feel like, and I shouldn't talk about this because I don't really know anything about it, but I swear I had seen something recently that Ruth Wilson is going to be in some kind of a biopic coming up where she's playing a real like historical lady who is in fact her distant relative, like Ruth Wilson's relative. So I don't know what that's all about, but if that sounds familiar or a fever dream, let us know what you think.
Because that's the thing that we've learned about. If we've learned one thing about Piper in the last year and change, it's that Piper has really vivid fever dreams and they feel real.
Yeah. Yeah. It's certainly true. It doesn't help that if I ever have vivid dreams, I wake up, I then spend like an hour laying in bed expanding upon the story. And so some of it could be fake and some of it could be real. Who knows?
And I love it. She was just in See How They Run last year, which I got very excited that she was in that. It's this great, I don't know if you've seen it.
I don't know what that is.
It's a great, like, murder mystery with Saoirse Ronan, another Air Buds palate cleanser actress, and a ton of other really great people. Very campy, very fun.
Cool.
Worth watching.
Yeah. I think this is an upcoming project. It hasn't actually been released yet or anything.
Cool.
But anyway, we'll could be wrong, it. Could be real. Either way, Ruth Wilson. All right.
Yeah. We love her. And I didn't know who he was before we watched this first one. And now I'm afraid of the loyalty that his fans have to him. Toby Stevens. Loyalty earned,
yes.
To be fair.
Yes. Are you just saying that within the Jane Eyre community or just in general for the actor?
I think both. There's a particular fan account that is very, I would describe them as powerful. That's like, it's like called like the Toby Stevens like official fan account or something like that. And they are very supportive of our stuff, which is good because when they share our tweets, for example, we get a lot of people coming in real hot being like, Toby Stevens is the only person on earth worth kissing.
Amazing. I hope that helps him sleep well at night knowing there's a whole bunch of people out there who want to smooch his face.
I also hope that. I hope he feels good about that. He seems like a very sweet being in life also.
Mm-hmm. I got a few episodes into Black Sails, the pirate show that he was in, and
nice.
I've heard good things about it. The first few episodes did not grab me, and it might have just been that kind of, you know, takes a little while for a show to find its feet sort of a thing. But I wouldn't mind trying again because I love pirate content, and especially for a television show to do pirate content, that's expensive and hard to do. So I'm like, I want that to work. So, and he's in it. Yeah.
So to our listeners who are obsessed with Toby Stevens, hello, welcome. We love having you here.
Hi. Hi, Toby Stevens. We know you also listen to the show. Welcome back. We get it.
If you want to come on, like we've said before, like feel free to just DM us. But we also get that, like, you're just a person living a life, listen to a podcast about you.
Also, I know, please stop emailing us, Toby Stevens. Like, no, we're not going to have you on the show. You're just too desperate.
Piper, I told you to tell me if Toby Stevens emails us about wanting to be on the show.
I've been deleting them. I sent him an email back. I'm like, stop texting us. Go away.
Yes, he got your personal cell phone number and sends you text every week being like, because like you guys are talking about the 2006 one again. Can I please come on?
Just kidding. Just kidding. We'd love to have you. So I said to Lillian, I prepared her for a brief second before we hit record that I was going to ask her a question that I ask every time we do one of these rewatches, which is, Lillian, what did you get from this viewing of Jane Eyre 2006 that you feel you didn't pick up on the first time?
I think when I first watched it, because we had watched the 83, so this was the fifth one we ever watched. So we had watched the 83, the 2011, the 97. Oh no, it was the fourth one because we did the 83 in two episodes. Yes. So those were the ones we had already watched. I sort of had this idea of like, what are the key points of Jane Eyre that you're going to hit to be book accurate? Mm-hmm. And so I didn't feel that this was very book accurate. And I now feel like, having read the book, those same moments feel like they aren't the most, they're not like scripted from the book, but there are other beats that I think they hit really well that a lot of adaptions brush over.
Yeah.
And I think it really, it's like, it's one of those things where like, as I watch it, knowing like, oh, this is from the book, but it does really change the story when you highlight this versus other moments. I think it's a really interesting, I like this adaptation as part of our conversation. It like really highlights how Jane Eyre can be told from these different perspectives and still be accurate and yet feel really different.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you want to kind of jump right into that and mention what are some of these examples of like a moment that they included that is from the book that you feel like changes things?
Some of the stuff around like the way they play the money matters part, sometimes people call it that, where like they're kind of flirting with each other over the money is a little bit different. The way that he like drags her to the church, but it doesn't feel angry. It feels like urgent. There was a couple others that I think will come up like as we're talking about it, but they also do a lot of things that are like actively not in the book and also giving us a lot of sympathy for him.
Oh,
like
yes.
The long flashbacks of moments, but like him shooting Celine's lover is in it.
Yeah, exactly. One scene that I had a note about that they include in this that I feel like most versions just kind of brush over or don't include at all, which I think is like one of the best moments of the story, is this brief kind of almost pre-honeymoon period when Jane has accepted his proposal and they're just in this state of bliss before it all comes tumbling down. And this version really spends time sitting in that happiness before it steals it all away. And that's one thing that I love and I think more versions should do, because typically I feel like we go from proposal to veil ripping to straight to your face, lie to you, to wedding, to ruin, to all the other stuff. And so having that brief glimpse of, to me, it's a way of seeing like, this is what they could have been and what they, in this, what they eventually will be. But this is the happy family kind of moment that shows why he's fighting so hard.
And I think I understand, because it does do, it spends a lot of time sitting in moments that when you're reading the book, it doesn't feel like they sit in it that much, but they do like allude, like she'll do the, like, we had conversations like every day. And they, instead of just doing that in a really quick montage that feels really quick, they give that a little bit more time in this. And the, one of the things when you said that, it reminded me, one of the big moments that they included that has been included before, but certainly not like this and not in a way that has stuck in my mind in this way, is like her nightmare.
Yeah.
That goes along with the veil ripping and then her going to him and getting comforted from the nightmare, which there was a moment when he was riding up on the horse and it just like really reminded me of this new piece of art that I've seen recently that I loved very much.
Oh, really?
Ooh. Yeah. Have you seen it? It's by this artist. Her name is I believe it's Pepper Cleveland.
I was going to say, well, I have seen it because I drew it. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yay! And our patrons can see it too if they go on there. You have to be a certain level of fancy to see P. Cleavey's art.
So a little early plug there for the Airbuds Patreon if you want to go see some beautiful gothic fan art of these two lovebirds.
Yes,
maybe give us a few bucks.
There's a spoiler alert for the figures in it. Jane Rochester, one horse.
A horse, yeah.
The horse is not as that expressive. I don't even know that his little gob's in it, but he's in it.
Oh my God. That should be the ultimate like Jane Eyre trivia, because I think at one point in the novel it says what the horse's name is, and I do not know it off the top of my head.
I also don't know the name of the horse.
Hmm. We're not that good of fans. We should just quit the podcast right now.
I think that if there's the only person that the number of people, this is something we've talked about before, but like people, when they find out I have this podcast, will casually say bold things like, I've seen every adaptation. I was like, I mean this in the nicest way. You haven't. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes people will be like, I have. And I'm like, cool. So I've seen 23.
Has it been that many?
It's been more than that now, because that was how many it was when we did Why Jane Eyre. So we're probably like 27, 28 now.
That's amazing. I need to log whenever we conclude this and we have our final count, which will not be every single one ever, but it'll be pretty darn high. I want to have that memorized. So I can be like, I once consumed 87 versions of Jane Eyre.
Yes. But that'll be my fun fact for Two Truths and a Lie.
Amazing. So my main notes here so this is my favorite portrayal of Jane. Mm-hmm. I really like this Rochester. He's not my favorite. I think there are a few others ahead of him, but I think their chemistry is some of the cutest and best ever portrayed between Rochester and Jane. And I think one thing that really stood out to me upon rewatching this is it really, and I think they played this up a lot with this whole kind of like twin sort of like conversation that they talk about.
I didn't enjoy that.
Okay. See, it's new information that the writers and like creators for this version inserted, but mm-hmm. I feel like the point of it is to kind of like emphasize and highlight this idea that these two people, though very different, from different like ages, classes, backgrounds, can have this really unique like link and special connection with each other, which is something that I think the actors portray extremely well on screen. We talked about this a whole bunch the first time we watched it, is that there are so many scenes where if you interpret it wrong, Sirian Hines, you can make it be very angry and scary and unattractive. But mm-hmm. if you portray it right, there's this flirtatious, like, it's jokey, it's mm-hmm. not mean. There's this light comfortability between the two of them. And I think that really stands out when you watch this, is how
totally.
Much they just like to be around each other. And even when there's, like, awkward moments or the power imbalance, there's still this sense that they both genuinely care for each other. And I think that's what this version does exceptionally well.
I think so, too. And I think they do such a good job, too, with Toby Stevens starting out so grumpy. What a little grumpy lad. And then he, like, you watch him get less grumpy as he falls in love with Jane. And mm-hmm. you watch him, like, have those moments, like you said, where it's so hard to portray that subtlety mm-hmm. of he's mad. And then because he's, like, got all this, like, rage in him. And then he remembers that Jane is there. And then he's, like, worried about her. So he's doting on, like, that sort of, like, they always call it his changeable nature and all that stuff. Like, being able to portray that is really hard. And I think they do it really well. And Ruth Wilson does the, like, flirty bashfulness in mm-hmm. a way that's not, like, it's easy to do that in a way that's like weak and or manipulative.
Yeah.
And I think she does it in a way that's so good and so genuine. Mm-hmm. So I see what you're saying there. I think they both play that so well.
I also like that. So you talked about his grumpiness. I think it's really interesting that even after like he's softened and like fallen in love with Jane, we still see like a couple other moments where that sort mm-hmm. of short temper of his kind of comes out again, which again is something hard to portray, to have someone have, you know, a temper and not have it instantly be a turn off and be like, ew, get out of here. Like we see it again when Adele is asking him to talk about the Caribbean and he starts to reminisce too much about his mad wife and how she betrayed him and it makes him mad. So he yells at her. And then we see it again after he's blinded and Jane comes to visit him and he has a few kind of like almost temper tantrum moments when he's like, okay, I don't want to hear about how hot your cousin is anymore. And she's like, you ass dude. And he's like, grum, 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 and he gets kind of grumpy.
It's very good. It's very reminiscent of, oh my God, Timothy Dalton and Zela Clark, but I think like that's a moment where it doesn't really play because they don't have that chemistry. Mm-hmm. And this moment it plays because she's like kind of laughing and he like is clearly it's the same thing with like when somebody's trying to play a drunk character and you can go way over the top, mm-hmm. or you can play it like you're drunk, but you're trying not to look drunk. Yeah. Like it's the same thing where it's like, he's jealous, but he's trying not to look jealous. And it's mm-hmm. so hard to do and so well done.
Yes, I agree. And I think the thing that I like about including those moments continuously through his journey is that we see him grow, but he also mm-hmm. doesn't completely change. Like mm-hmm. he's still the same person. And I like seeing that too, because I think it can become almost unbelievable if you do the enemies to lovers, but it's a complete 180 when like at the end of my favorite animated Disney film of all time, Beauty and the Beast, when we see the way the prince is reacting as a human guy, I'm like, that's not the same dude. That's just it's just a human man who popped in when the beast like vanished into thin air. This is a different person.
Piper is one of the people who watches Beauty and the Beast and goes, I would not want to date him as the person. This is the beast.
I mean, I would, but I'd be like, at least grow a beard. I don't know. You look so different.
So short now.
I know you were massive. It was cool. I never got to ride on your back. That would have been awesome.
You're like, can we just like, was it a curse or was it a gift for me specifically? I understand that the people who are furniture and stuff don't want to do it. But.
Amazing. So yeah, those are just some of my like kind of overarching notes about this version. I mean, I think I'm sure we talked a lot from our original watch through of a lot of the choices that they made of these new things are kind of more, usually when I see this happen, I interpret that it's them doing it to appeal to a more modern mm-hmm. audience, to make the character more likable. So we physically see Bertha cheating on him. We have all these other moments to kind of sympathize. And there's all kinds of other little things, but I'm not mad about these changes. I have said before, I like when an adaptation actually is like, I'm going to do something different. Mm-hmm. And I think so long as it's true to like the tone and the message and the overall vibe of the story, then I'm there for it. I want people to take chances and do those things. But yeah, what are your thoughts about some of that stuff?
Yeah, I think they changed Bertha probably the most in mm-hmm. this. I think it does make him a lot more sympathetic. And I think it's really important if you're going to play. I think when I first watched it, I thought they just made Rochester a lot softer in a lot of other ways. Mm-hmm. And as I've read the book now, one of our first pieces of feedback that we got was somebody said, I don't know how you can review these without having read the book. Like and they said the 2006 is my favorite. And I think it's the most true to the book. And I was like, that's so interesting because I watched that and don't think it's true to the book at all. And now watching it, I'm like, it's just interpreting different moments of the book.
Yeah.
And I think that that's really well done and really interesting. Mm-hmm. But I do think that they take a lot more of that. Like, if you're going to see it this way, mm-hmm. It does not fit with yeah. Rochester treating Bertha the way that he does in the book. Mm-hmm. And even though like, but I think like similarly, we talked about the 2011 and kind of taking the teeth out of it. Mm-hmm. Their choice was to not really focus on Bertha at all.
Yeah.
Where this choice was to soften the relationship there and mm-hmm. give us more context and have her be better cared for mm-hmm. and all of this other stuff. Where it's kind of, but you're still, that's still not Rochester then though.
Yeah.
Because part of Rochester is the constantly going, I love him, mm-hmm. but he locked someone in the attic.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the other thing with Bertha too, is that she, in this version, like, I'm so used to Bertha being someone who we only know because of her laughter. Mm-hmm. And in the book, it's a lot of referencing her laughter, but I think they did a really good job of playing with the visual aspect of things. Mm-hmm. They were a little bit more intense about, like, calling it out. Like, one of the first notes I made is when, after the shortest, most brutal childhood, they pull up to the hill, like, going to Thornfield, and they're like, look, a light's on in the tower. Do, 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 do. And I'm like, why would a carriage driver call that out?
No, you're totally right. And, like, that, the thing that stood out to me again in watching this, because I always like to look at a version when it comes to thinking about Miss Fairfax and seeing, did the people creating this version, did they want Miss Fairfax to know what was going on, or did they want her to be oblivious? And this one, I think she definitely knows.
For sure.
Because, yeah, there's like, I mean, everyone in the house seems to be, most of the staff seems to know what's happening. Because, yeah, that first night also when she's walking and she like looks up there and she's kind of like talking to the butler and she's like, are you taking Mrs. Fairfax? And he's like, just doesn't respond. And she's like, oh, it's so spooky. And then like later, you know, she has questions and or hears the laugh or the noise or something like that. And the way that Miss Fairfax responds is very much like, I know what's happening. Don't ask questions. I'm denying all of this. And we also, and this may be one of the only versions too, where we have that scene in the kitchen where the maids are talking about mm-hmm. how Grace is paid more money. And they kind of like quiet up when they see that Jane is listening. So it gives it more of this weird sort of like conspiracy theory that everybody knows except for Jane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think that was another one where I was like, when we first watched that, I didn't think that was in the text, and mm-hmm. because it's not in any other adaptions.
Yeah.
And it is in this. And I think that's so interesting to be telling an accurate story that's really different. Mm-hmm. I also, like, I think this is a fair interpretation of Mrs. Fairfax, but I don't like her in this one.
Yeah.
I think she's actively, intentionally lying to Jane. And then she, like, talks to her about the wet, but, like, she was letting Rochester marry Blanche. Like, she mm-hmm. was like, he should marry Blanche. And then didn't want Jane to do it. And it's just, like, gross. I don't like it. I'm not a fan of this. But it also, like, technically not inaccurate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do stand by the idea that I don't think in the book, mm-hmm. Miss Fairfax knew that the woman upstairs was his wife.
Yes.
And again, we don't know necessarily in this if she knew that it was his wife, but she's definitely aware of the mad woman in the attic. Mm-hmm. And so it's just, yeah, it makes that whole line kind of blurry, which is, I see what you say about like, you don't like this Fairfax as much. Because it does sort of remove one of the like allies that Jane mm-hmm. has from her network of allies or people that are there to support her. That kind of takes that away. And it's interesting because I feel like Fairfax is essentially sort of like the mother figure mm-hmm. in Jane's life. I don't know if that's something we've ever really talked about in detail, but that's such a different spin to have sort of this new pseudo kind of mom character, then kind of be that sort of to keep those lies, those mm-hmm. That information from you, to lie to you and maybe be deceptive in that way is kind of cruel and an odd choice.
And it makes her very, like, it puts her in a category more like Bessie, where I have these mixed feelings about her versus someone who I'm just like, no, she's like in Jane's corner. She's just too sweet of a bean. Where like this, it felt like her moments of like sweetness, because I know she's doing this, she's hiding this thing, felt more like malicious. Yeah. Like it felt more like actively manipulative than naive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how I would describe Mrs. Fairfax, is almost just like willfully naive and just follows the rules of society and doesn't worry about it. Mm-hmm. Another note that I have down about Mrs. Fairfax is when she's taught, there's a couple lines that like just didn't stand out to me the first time I watched it. And now it's like so funny to me when she's talking about Rochester and Jane's like, tell me about him. Like, what's this guy at? Like, tell me about who he is. And she's like, oh, I'm not like, he's not going to find that funny. Well, not that he doesn't have a sense of humor. He used to tell jokes as a child.
Would he just like run into a room with his like little jompers and be like, knock, knock.
It's like, and I can't even imagine describing someone now and being like, they used to sell jokes as a child, so they're funny.
But not anymore. The world burned that out of him, don't worry.
Right? That's what that sounds like.
Oh my gosh. Okay, I want to talk about Adele and the family aspect. That's another personal I like this about this version. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, a strength of this version is that we get so many sort of like found family moments between Jane, Rochester, and Adele. So we have, and again, we talked about this in the first one, where they really kind of emphasize the fact that he is sort of this naturalist. He has all of the taxidermy, all of the like butterfly collection and stuff. He insists on taking Adele out to the river to give her this nature lesson. Mm-hmm. And we see multiple moments of Rochester outside with Jane and Adele, whether or not they're doing these nature lessons or if they're just sort of like hanging around outside. But I have this quote here that I wrote down where he says, "It's now your job as well as mine to bring Adele up correctly," when they're sort of talking about all of this stuff. And I feel like that's just one great example of how this version, I think, is very clearly like showing us, they're like, look, this is what could be. This is sort of, you know, maybe to help the audience, again, with the sympathy aspect, be like, if you had a glimpse of this and were so close to it being real, wouldn't you want to make it real no matter the moral question of why or whatever? So, yeah.
And I think that's another thing when I was with this Adele, there's a couple of things I wrote down about her. One, her entrance is incredible. They have, they literally, the first time we see Adele on screen, she opens a curtain before she does her little dance and she's wearing the most insane childlike costume where you put on like too many things that clash, but you think you look incredible. So that's great. The other thing too, is one of the things we've talked about before is that this Adele is a lot older than most Adeles that we see, but they also give her a lot more acting to do.
Yeah.
Like she fully is fluent in English and French and she carries a lot more scenes and like is in a lot more moments. So I think that's very fair. But another thing that happens that same moment you were referencing where they're talking about they're out by the lakeside and it's the thing we talked about a lot last time, which is I am disgusting.
Yeah.
And she, one of the things that Rochester mentions, which has always sort of bothered me and it hit me a little bit differently in this time. And I made a connection that I hadn't done before, which is, he talks about like the getting the blood of the mother or whatever, like the gross way they talk about it. But essentially he's afraid that Adele is going to end up like her mother. Mm-hmm. And something I've never connected before is Bertha ended up like her mother. Mm-hmm. Like, is that fear as much watching Adele follow in the footsteps of Bertha and Bertha-like characters? Mm-hmm. Because Bertha and Celine aren't that different. They're different in that like Celine didn't have this mental illness as in any way that we saw, but she did abandon her child. So she wasn't like 100% there. And
they're both described as rather promiscuous characters.
So if there's this fear that makes the like level of intensity he has for her, not just about Celine, but also about Bertha. And I think that's really interesting.
I agree. Yeah. I think, there are so many like things directionally that this adaptation does that I think gives a lot of very interesting different perspectives from characters that aren't just Jane or Rochester. So yeah, I think it's like looking at that and seeing Adele and thinking about like, what are the influences that make someone who they are? Because I think also as a new audience member, you could think about how extreme Jane's childhood scenes are of how her aunt treated her. And those are like some of the most extreme Aunt Reed scenes I've ever seen portrayed, where it's like dramatic camera angles and she's like screaming down at Jane from this like perspective. But so like to see like that's what Jane came from and yet she managed to like be this nice sweet lady, but then also like we have Adele here and I think at least Jane feels the responsibility to be like, I never had a mother. I can kind of be that role for this girl. And it's something that we hear in those classic lines too, which I don't think she had like word for word from the book in this version, but the kind of thing where Rochester tells the story and expects to scandalize Jane mm-hmm. and be like, you're going to cast her out and give me your 2 weeks notice, right? And she's like, no, I'm going to cling to her even closer than before. And I think that's a great sort of like, I don't know, it shows us Jane's character. It shows us mm-hmm. like the importance of influence and caring for children and all kinds of other stuff.
That is such a great example, I think, of what you were just talking about, of the way they interpreted the book slightly differently, because I think that what they say versus what they actually did, like she doesn't say that line of I'll hold her closer, but we watch her go into Adele's room and like tuck the blanket around her and give her this little kiss on the cheek. Mm-hmm. And it's seeing her in action doing that. And I don't necessarily think that's better, but I think they did that with a lot of other moments that I did really like. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a really interesting way to sort of interpret it slightly differently in a way that I enjoyed.
Yeah.
And then we also talked about the family outing a lot last time because it was the best and it's
so dang cute.
Holds up and it's still the cutest.
One thing that really struck me too of having read the novel and then going back to see this version. So because we have a couple of moments where Rochester will start his monologue and then the show will like literally do like a doodly doodly doo and then it'll like show us kind of like the memory as his like voice like narrates over the top of it. And I'm like, okay, I don't know if this is what they were trying to do, but I feel like it really conveys just how much of like a dramatic like theater kid mm-hmm. Rochester is to be like, sit with me, employee, as I tell you this smoldering tale of woe. And she's like, okay.
Here's the thing. I told you I only watched like part of one interview with him. Toby Stevens fully says that he thinks Rochester is really dramatic theater boy.
Yay, amazing! Okay, Toby, you can come on the show now.
We've changed our minds. You're welcome. But I just think that that's like so cute that when you think about the difference between the way Sirian Hines, there we go, described Rochester in that interview you read of him versus like how Toby Stevens describes Rochester. Mm-hmm. And you can see the difference in their portrayal.
Yeah, absolutely. One more thing that kind of ties into one of my notes, just because we're still kind of talking about them, like doing all these outdoor activities. So this occurred to me too, and I feel like we discussed this when we were talking about these sort of sections in the novel itself, mm-hmm. but there are so many outdoor scenes where they're spending all this yeah. time together. And I think the significance of that is, apart from just, you know, he's got this sort of like naturalist little hobby that they've given him, but also he literally has a line in this version after they've sent Mason away from his attack, where he's like, you know, he's like, stay up, walk with me or whatever. And he says, this place is a prison. This place is like whatever. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to, this place is a dungeon. And I think all of the outdoor time that we see is like the show telling us and showing us Rochester hates not only to like, you know, be home and be reminded of Bertha, but especially hates being inside the same house, mm-hmm. being trapped with her. I think he feels trapped. And so he's like, if I have to be at Thornfield, I'm at least going to be outside as much as I can. It's sort of mm-hmm. his escape. And I think you could even draw a cute parallel to what we've often said about Jane. She finds mm-hmm. her escape in nature. And I think this version shows that really well for him too, that he's also someone who's like, I need to be outdoors and get yeah. away.
And I think it similarly when at the end, when she has that moment with where she's thinking about St. John's horrendous proposal and she goes out onto the moors and sits on cliffs and looks out over nature and sits by a waterfall. And then there's sort of like a weird smash cut of the water being weird.
Yeah.
Well, she hears Rochester's voice because it's 2006 and they just figured out how to do that. And that was pretty cool for them. But it's Jane going out and reflecting in nature in that way that we talked about when we read the book, that Jane finds herself in nature. She experiences that like clarity and connection, not through society, but from God's creation.
Yeah.
We are going to do a theology episode at some point and have someone who knows what they're talking about help us. But I thought that was so interesting connecting with your point, because I hadn't even really registered because we had talked about what a nature Boy Scout he was in mm-hmm. the first time.
Yeah.
It's interesting that that's what stood out for me for Jane and that's what stood out for you with Rochester.
Absolutely. There are a few cutesy moments that I have to highlight that really like got me the second time watching around. So one thing that I love, after the burning bed is put out, the first thing he does is ask if she's okay.
I also wrote that down.
Why don't more versions do that? Like, you've woken up and yes, of course you're confused and you have a lot of questions, but if you are as in love with Jane, like at this point of the story that I think they want us to believe, why isn't your first thing to go and like cradle her face and be like, are you burned? Are you hurt? Are you all right? And he just instantly, he's like, are you all right? Okay, phew. Now what's going on here? Like, give me answers.
And the way he comes back and lies too is like so how I picture Rochester lying in the book, because he comes back and he goes, so it's what I thought it was, and it's fine. Did you remind me? Did you see something in the hall when you were out in the hall? Did you see anything? And she goes, no, but I heard a laugh, and I think it's Grace Poole. And he goes, yeah, it's Grace Poole for sure.
Yep,
you
awesome.
Nailed it. Don't ask any more questions. I've got this handled. But it was for sure Grace Poole. Go back to bed.
Meanwhile, it's like, what's this suspicious mess over here? What's going on? But I don't know. She's too enamored, because it's not long. I think it's in that same moment when he's like wrapping his coat or his thing, and he says, we agreed you'd never be cold again. It's like, oh damn. Yes. Oh my. I love this. This is nice. But again, I think this is like the sexiest version.
Totally.
Yeah.
And I also think it was real and like, it's sort of like subtly more sexual than other ones. And then there's the Stacey and you're like,
damn, dude. Yeah. Which I, in rewatching that, because we had talked about when we did a revisit of 2011, the way that they give us sort of a passionate moment to break up all the boring, like being on the moors with St. John Rivers scenes. I felt like that's a cool way to interpret how in the novel she comes across as extremely horny while she's away, just being like, I miss this guy. I love this guy. Why couldn't I like go away with him? And so, yeah, I think that scene, to not only do a flashback to the stay scene, but to like put, I think also the like sexual like tension that she's feeling away from him into her memory of that moment, I think is wonderful.
I think it's really well done. Another moment that I have a question for here, because I think it's similar to the fire scene, where it's a scene where a lot of times I'm frustrated. The Mason scene is a scene that I'm often frustrated by. I think they did such a good job with like, she notices that he's bleeding and then she wipes that up and like cleans it up off the floor and then goes to her room and gets, so like, it takes this thing where she has this, when we're reading the book, she has this sense internally that something's wrong and she's going to be needed. And we get that visual cue for it in the TV show where she sees something wrong and she manages it. And, but the question that I had in watching this was, I was like, okay, so she sees Rochester bleeding and she just immediately handles it. She doesn't like, cause like if, depending on who it was, if I saw somebody bleeding, I'd be like, dude, you're bleeding.
Just call him out and he's like, Jane, come on.
We're like, she has this connection with him and realizes that he's trying to hide something. And so she helps him hide it with no questions. And it also then makes more sense as to why she would go up and take care of Mason and still not ask any questions. Like somehow those two moments make the other one more valid to my mind.
Yeah.
But the question I have for you, Piper, is who would you do like what Jane does that night, no questions asked for?
Starting you? With,
you would do that for me? Cool. Because that's where I was going to lead up to that. But no, so if I like came downstairs, there's a bunch of people here and I was bleeding, you would like clean it up. And then if I was like, you got to come and take care of this person, don't ask me any questions about it now or later.
Nope. You're my first choice. Because especially I'd be like, this is vaguely familiar. On. I'm like, but Lillian, you can tell me though if you have someone locked up, because we've done this podcast a million times and we know how to handle these situations. So
speaking of, to put a pin in that, because I am going to come back and ask you about other people. Speaking of knowing, like seeing something familiar, while I was watching the wedding scene today, my brother recently got engaged and I texted his fiance. Hey, Holly, if you're listening, love you. But I texted her and was like, so do you want someone like during the ceremony to interrupt and say that they they must declare an impediment. And she goes, do you mean like when you're officiating? Do I want you to ask? Or do you mean Rob has a wife locked in the attic?
Nice. By the way, congrats. I didn't know your brother proposed. That's wonderful.
I could have sworn I told you. Yeah, they got engaged on my birthday, which is very cute for them and me.
That's very cute. Mm-hmm. And now I'm sure you'll bring it up every single time they talk about their anniversary. You'll be like, Actually, don't you mean my birthday? Sorry.
No, they're not getting married on my birthday. I would actually not love that because my birthday is to be about me.
Well, if you're going to be officiating, then you'd have to be up there wearing your party hat. Your sad little party hat.
Will
to be
you
like,
for your
look,
birthday? Do you like, want to marry us?
Like, look, we're obviously a very special day for Petrie and his soon-to-be wife, but also
Rob,
it's my
totally
birthday.
Person.
Okay, Rob. For Rob and his soon-to-be future wife, but it's also my birthday, and we all need to pay attention to that. And may we all please sing happy birthday to me as the bride walks down the aisle.
Well, listen, obviously middle of ceremony, welcome everyone. Is anyone else celebrating any special occasions today that we should maybe sing about?
Amazing. Brilliant plan.
Incredible. Maybe I'll do that anyway.
So speaking of parties, I have a question to counter your question.
Oh, okay.
So this version, it gives us a gypsy scene.
Yes.
But instead of him doing drag, he's hired a lady to, read fortunes and get information out of people. I think they did that because they thought that him dressing up and deceiving her would be like a step too far and maybe too weird or maybe too like deceitful. But I almost think it's a worse prank to have a third person in the room when you're like, I gotcha, I'm pranking you. And I brought this stranger in to help me. Now they saw you make a fool of yourself. It's not just between you and me now. This other person saw you do all of that. Ha ha, gotcha.
It's for sure meaner this way. I don't know. Because the first time we watched it, I thought it was because they thought it would be nicer.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think this time it was a little bit the weirdness aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But Rochester's a weird dude and you just have to lean into that.
Yeah.
But I also really think it was the logistics of how do you hide an actor? Like in the book, they can just be like, it was dim in the room and I didn't know it was him until I did. Where it's like... It's hard. I think the 83 is the only one where Rochester dresses up like a gypsy and you're kind of confused. And then it turns out that he is in fact Rochester.
Well, not to bring the horde of Toby Steven fans down upon us like raining fire, but, maybe he just doesn't have the same vocal chops as, say, a Vincent Price, who can go from a gypsy voice to a dapper man voice.
That's true. Vincent Price nailed that, but he didn't have to do it visually. Only
yes.
Timothy Dalton can pull off the, like, I'm a giant, giant man. Now I'm a hunched little lady.
It's incredible. And I'm so proud of him.
It's so good. I say good. It's terrible and insane.
It's very bad.
The gypsy scene will never stop being insane to me.
I love it.
It's crazier than the wife in the attic to me, if I'm totally honest.
Lillian, when our beautiful patrons help us fund our own movie adaptation that we're going to make of Jane Eyre, I want it to be a modern day movie, and I want our stud muffin that we're casting as Rochester. He's literally gonna like do full drag. That's
yes.
how he's gonna do it. It's gonna be the insane makeup, the 3 mile high hair, the fake breasts, like
oh my
everything.
God. I can see this as like a drag show that she goes to.
Yes.
And she doesn't know he's a drag queen and doesn't recognize him.
Yes.
Because his drag is that good.
Amazing.
And then she's doing like audience participation.
Yes.
And that's
oh my
how
God.
She tricks him.
It's like stand-up comedy and he's like roasting the audience and he's roasting Jane. And then later he'll like drop his voice and be like, Jane, it's me, your lover. Like, ah! Like, what the hell? We have
yes,
to make this
yes,
movie.
Yes. Oh my God. And we need such a big budget for that because we have to hire an incredible drag queen to help.
We need Trixie Mattel to be there as our what's the word I'm looking for?
Drag mother.
Yeah, but like a consultant. Yeah,
yes.
We need Trixie as a consultant.
I like
so.
That I go drag. Don't worry, drag mother. Drag step, I know.
Amazing.
Incredible.
So, yeah. I think it's one of the cutest, like talking over money scenes ever.
Yes. So
of any adaption. I also wrote down, since Jane draws her two portraits, of one of herself and one of Blanche before she meets Blanche, mm-hmm. I'm like, so Jane has psychic powers. She can perfectly predict what Blanche looks like, because in the book, it's just supposed to be that she draws what she thinks a pretty lady is. And mm-hmm. then in this, it like is literally that actress's face on the paper.
I think they did a good job of like not making it quite a perfect picture of the actress's face, but the hair is her hair.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh my God. But what I also really liked about that scene, because I was thinking about this a lot, is I think Ruth Wilson, I'm going to start by saying Ruth Wilson, obviously gorgeous woman. Mm-hmm. And I think she's pretty in this, but I think that what I liked about looking at that drawing that made sense for me in this is there's a lot of scenes where Jane is looking in the mirror and you can tell by her reaction what she thinks about how pretty she is. Mm-hmm. And they change it throughout the TV show, just like they do in the book. Like Jane looks in the mirror the morning after the proposal and thinks that she looks lovely because love has made her beautiful.
Yeah.
And she does that in this. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
I agree. I love the scene right after the proposal when she wakes up and her hair is down and she's like twirling in front of her mirror mm-hmm. and she's just giddy and happy. And it's really cute.
It's so cute.
So that's wonderful. One of my other quotes that I wrote down that I think is very romantic and is a great way of like showing how Rochester feels before mm-hmm. like it's all been put out there is after the party is done and all of the guests have left, mm-hmm. he sees her by the books and he has this line where he's like, you're back to our routine mm-hmm. now that our guests are gone. And you could, if you're Jane and you think he's marrying Blanche, think he's using the royal hour, but he's like, you and me, it's our house and our guests have gone and it's our routine, future wife who I love, wink.
Yeah. That's such a good one. I have another line written down here as well, because I saw it and started laughing like crazy because it goes with an anecdote that you may have heard before.
Okay.
But our listeners for sure haven't. So when she's at Aunt Reed's house, when she goes back to Gateshead and the cousins are bickering, which again, like all of that, so true to the book. There's this moment where one of the cousins says to the other, or no, says to Jane when she comes in, you have not grown tall, which is like such a good insult. And the reason I know it's a good insult is because years ago I was a nanny and I was nanny for this 7-year-old girl. And she was like getting ready to go back to school. I was their nanny over the summer and she was preparing to see her enemy. Cause you know how kids have enemies.
Oh yeah.
So she was preparing to see her enemy and she wanted to have some like insults ready. And she like one of the ones that she was practicing was, I see you're the same height as last year.
Oh my God. She was practicing her insults.
And it was, I see you're the same height as last year, which is a 7-year-old's insult that
incredible
this woman also used.
So dang good. I also love, yes, leaning into the viciousness of how the one sister treats the other. It's
so brutal.
It's good to see on screen. I love she literally makes her burst into tears. And it's just like, damn. I think when we saw that, we talked about it the first time. It's like, that was crazy.
And then it's in the book.
Uh-huh.
Crazy.
I also loved when she comes back and she's talking about her family. And she's like, oh, she's like going to go off to that nunnery and probably be Mother Superior in no time. And I'm like, that's hilarious.
Incredible. Let's talk about the proposal scene, or do you have something you need to talk about before then?
My last note is about St. John, so I can talk about proposals.
It's so good. It's mm-hmm. incredible. We can't talk about it for too long because it's just, I think I love this proposal. I think it has all the good stuff. It's him building up that anticipation, but then as soon as he realizes how upset she is, he turns it. They get to have that moment where they really confess their feelings. They do the greatest lines so well.
Yeah.
I love them.
I love it so much. It is really great. I was also noticing this time around, I liked the choice of framing that when he's having the line, one of your faves about like, I think there's this string under my rib mm-hmm. tying me to you, blah, blah, blah. The way they frame it is that he is in the foreground. They're sitting next to each other. He's in the foreground and she is like in the background. And so His face is up front, hers is behind, and they're both looking off into the distance. But mm-hmm. it's a great way of seeing two actors on screen and having this intense moment without them like staring at each other. And yeah. we can both see how they're processing the emotions of this moment, of him monologuing and kind of hinting at his feelings and her trying desperately hard not to break down in front mm-hmm. of him. And I just thought that was cool framing and I liked it.
And you can also see how they miss, like, because there's so many moments like that where you're like, how could you have missed that he's in love with you? Look mm-hmm. at his face.
Yeah.
Where, like, having them next to each other, it's like, oh, I get it. Mm-hmm. But look right there, yeah. sweetie.
Yeah.
But she's trying not to because she's a little cry.
Yeah. It's hard. It's so cute. The, and they do great kisses and they run in the rain. And I like that we literally see God strike down the tree after he's like, God, metal not. And God's like, lightning bolt, bitch. It's just great.
But the other moment too, so speaking of invisible strength, something I've texted you about, but I haven't mentioned on the podcast, mm-hmm. Taylor Swift has two Jane Eyre related songs and many Jane Eyre related lyrics.
Whoa.
But one of them is called Invisible String.
Huh.
And it's not all Jane Eyre, but the like the main line in the chorus is, there's an invisible string tying me to you.
Cute.
And that is a Jane Eyre reference.
Awesome.
And then she has another song called Mad Woman mm-hmm. That has lots of like Bertha E references and is essentially like what I saw when I was like Googling it and being like, do I have Jane Eyre on the brain all the time? Or is that where that comes from?
Yeah.
They said that Invisible String is like Jane Eyre and Mad Woman is like Wide Sargasso Sea. And I love that.
Interesting.
Very
cool.
Fun fact about Taylor Swift for all of you.
T Swift, you can come on the podcast now. I know I said earlier, leave us alone. We don't want your fame, but we'll take it.
Please,
yeah, you can come back.
Stop deleting emails when celebrities ask to come on the podcast. I've said it before. I'll say it again.
Lillian, I feel like you're Icarus just waiting to fly into the famous fire, and I'm just trying to protect you from that. So
you're like, I want our podcast just to be for real fans.
Yeah, we're not going to bring in all these fakers. No way. Got to stay legit.
Speaking of fakers, when Rochester brings her inside after the proposal and he takes off her little shawl, he says, go and take off these wet things. And no line has ever been more sexual.
Yeah, it's really cute. And they can't leave each other because they're smooching so much. It's very good. Okay, so obviously I do love his stay speech scene. It is incredible. But one thing, it just felt to me, whenever he would do his like desperate kisses at the end, it kind of felt like he was making like eating sounds. He'd be like, and I'm like, stop eating at her mouth. I'm like, that's still
were
good.
Very wet, very noisy kisses the whole movie in a way yeah. that made me uncomfortable.
I kind of like it. Like, kisses are my thing. So, but it was just like, I was very acutely aware of the sound.
Another like physical attraction moment. And we maybe talked about this before, but it just is like the most standout moment when he's like, doing the stay speech and he's like, we'll go to my villa in France and we're just gonna live like brother and sister. Dude, you are spooning her actively
yep.
after a makeout session in bed. You guys are gonna live like brother and sister for sure. Brothers and sisters who
I was gonna say like really creepy brothers and sisters. Gross.
Oh god. I have two more notes that we can just wait until the very end because okay. one of them is related to the very end. Mm-hmm. But that's most of what I have.
Nice. My note about St. John is, so this is also a version where we get to see Miss Oliver and a lot of versions cut her mm-hmm. out. And I think it's good to see, to understand how much of an idiot that St. John is, that he has this gorgeous lady uh-huh. who's like, I love you. I've always been in love with you. I brought you like doves. I gave you a school. Wouldn't you like to see my dad who's obsessed with you too? We love you. Please notice me. Like uh-huh. just here in this idiot, like won't even look at her. He's always like turning away, like he's like a 10-year-old boy yeah. on the playground, like ignoring her, not even like responding when she like talks to him the second time at the school. And I'm like, dude, this is so rude and it's cringy and it's just I hate yeah. seeing that, but it's good because you're like, this guy's an idiot and he doesn't deserve Jane or any woman.
I have a confession to make to you, Piper, and to mm-hmm. our listeners.
Yeah.
I kind of a weird last couple weeks. So I didn't have an opportunity to have enough time to watch all of this. So I skipped a lot of the Sinjin parts.
That's fine.
I just went, I won't watch that because it makes me sad and I won't be happy. So I skipped to the kissing parts of the last episode.
Well, there you go. That's your prerogative, Lillian.
Thank you. I'm an adult and this is my podcast.
Amazing. Yeah, you didn't miss much. He was a big weenie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
if we get 100 patrons in the next 90 days, I'll go back and watch all of those Sinjin parts.
Yeah, that's a reason to like give us money, make Lillian watch a scene that she hates.
Mm-hmm.
What's your final note so we can do our little wrap ups here?
So I have two. One mm-hmm. is specifically on Bertha calls Jane puta mm-hmm. in Spanish when she goes into the room, which I think is a great detail to make Bertha a little more human. Puta means either bitch or whore, depending on how you translate it.
Incredible. I love it. That's when Jane says it takes one to know one, but in Spanish.
Because Jane, it turns out, also fluent in all languages.
Amazing.
But then the other note that I have is on fashion. So specifically the wedding dress, you can just like really tell that she has the wrong underwear on.
Oh my god. Now you're just being you're just plagiarizing from our previous guest slash friend.
And then like the last part, speaking of our guest slash friend, is when Bertha is dragging the burning dress through the halls, my actual first thought was, look, it's Layla burning on my costume.
Oh my god, amazing. Hi Layla, that's for you. So good. Last time I laughed my butt off about the way that this version ends, because it they're all posing for a painting, and when the frame comes in we see that she like, or the painter put Sinjin up in the corner. Hilarious. My second thought was, I'm like, okay, this scene of like gathering everyone together, it's really cute to see like the full cast and they're like, look all the family, look how happy we are. I noticed that even Grace Poole is like carrying one of the babies. Yeah. So like she's like seems to be doing better now that she's not taking care of a crazy lady. But then they gather down and they sit and they're like, okay, everybody, like get the dog, get the baby. And then it like, you see the guy painting and everything. And I'm like, okay, this would work if it was modern times and you were taking a photo, but you guys are now going to sit there for hours, get sunburned. The dog's going to see a squirrel and try to run off. The baby's going to cry. And they're just like, oh yeah, I forgot this is going to take us 5 days to do this painting.
I remembered one more thing when you said the end, because when they zoomed out with that painting, it was so funny to me how clearly there was like a paper frame that was the frame for the picture, and at some point it fades into the picture. That was hilarious.
Very good.
The other thing too was, now that we've read Wide Sargasso Sea, the owl that flies off the roof before mm-hmm. Bertha jumps off the roof is absolutely directly from Wide Sargasso Sea, because that is not in Jane Eyre, but it is in the in Wide Sargasso Sea, which I thought was interesting.
So cool. I love it.
Anyway, final ratings. Do you remember what your rating was last time?
No, remind me, please.
It was 9 out of 10. Mine was 9.5.
Nice. I'm going to keep it the exact same. 9 out of 10.
I'm also going to keep it the exact same. What are you going to rate it out of?
Oh, this one is going to be 9 out of 10 twins.
But, ugh, God, I hate the twins.
But what I want you to do is you have to just get a cover from the Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito movie Twins and put that up there.
Okay, fine.
9 out of 10 versions of Twins on VHS.
Perfect. The VHS specifically. Got it.
Yes.
Mine is 9.5 out of 10. Oh God, I don't even know. Pearls. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna say pearls because they did the necklace so well in this adaptation.
Yeah, there was so many fun little details to kind of like look for this time. So
yeah, yay. I do think it was really book accurate in that way. Well, next time we are going to be doing a first of its kind adaptation for us, which is an opera. And unfortunately, they don't have a recording of it, but they do have an album. So we're going to listen to the album.
Yay.
It's the 2002 by M. Berkeley. There's an extra E in there, but it seems like it should be Berkeley.
Okay, neat. I love opera. Do you like, have you ever seen
never,
an opera?
Never, not even one time, not even listened to one. This is going to be my very first opera. Baby's first opera.
Amazing. Very cool. Well, that'll be super fun. So if you're excited to hear our thoughts about people talk singing, then make sure to tune in next time. You can also follow us if you don't already on all social. We are at Airbuds. You can send us emails unless you're a celebrity, stop. I'm tired of banning you guys. You know, just leave us alone. This is a small town little pot.
If you're celebrities who have been trying to get on the show, I want you here. I'm fighting Piper on it. Don't give up.
So that is airbuds@gmail.com. If you have a few dollars you want to spend to help us make this show even better than it already is and gain access to some of our amazing bonus materials, we have a Patreon. $3 gets you a bunch of stuff, but $8 lets you see some fantabulous artwork really don't want to miss out on.
You really don't. The artist is incredible. Yeah. I get to see all of the works in progress, and the second part of the two-part series is on its way, girls and boys.
Hell yeah. Very exciting.
But other exciting things that you get if you're part of our Patreon is kind of behind-the-scenes backstage footage of stuff. Last week, you got to hear Piper sing a custom-made song when the video froze. So that's on our Patreon. That's only $3, babe. And you will also get backstage, behind the scenes, come along with us when we go to Arizona next month. Yeah. So just about a month from today, on April 14th, we are going to be going to Prescott, Arizona, to a performing arts college, the name of which is currently in the chat for Piper to read.
Oh boy, I'm going to go read it from the chat.
Because we are going to be seeing a musical adaptation of Jane Eyre. We were invited by them and we went, you know what? Let's do it.
Yay. So this is the Yavape College. So very excited to see this because it's their version of the Broadway musical. So
yes,
cannot wait. Yes,
and the Performing Arts Center is where we're going to be seeing it. And we were invited by a lovely listener and we could not be more excited.
Yeah. If you are in the Arizona area of that entire state, come and join us.
It's about
It'd be so great.
An hour, I want to say like northwest of Phoenix.
Cool.
Yeah. So if we're going to be there, anyone.
Yeah. And if you can't hop on a plane, you can spend $8 to see the behind the scenes journey as we go to a warm place.
I think it's three for the behind the scenes.
It's even cheaper discounts, baby.
You know what? Maybe it's eight, maybe it's three. You got to go look at our Patreon and see what we said before, because we're going to stick with that.
Amazing. So yes, we'd love your support. We'd love for you guys to kind of like join us as we go on this first travel adventure for the podcast. So
Yeah. Anyway.
Until then, happy Jane Eyre reading and watching. We love you guys. Goodbye.
Bye.